Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we welcome back to the program Dr. Paul Kanger, who's a professor of political science and history at Grove City College. His views are his own. The website is visionandvalues.org. He's also a best-selling author and a widely syndicated columnist. Paul, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Jerry. Good to be back. Thanks.
Okay, so here is the question on the table for this particular snippet of our conversation. You ready? It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
How did Hillary Clinton go from being a Goldwater girl in a church-type family to being somebody who is so strong in favor of abortion rights? I mean, virtually up to the moment of birth, without any rights at all for the unborn. In fact, she even wants to force us to pay for it, and she's liberal in so many other areas as well. How did this happen?
Well, about a 50-year, literally 50-year transformation from being her, you know, her father's Goldwater girl. I was supporting Barry Goldwater, she did, in 1964. To where she is today, and I guess sort of the first break from that path. I mean, she was raised in a traditional Methodist church. This was the Park Ridge United Methodist Church in Park Ridge, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
That was where she was raised, and she, you know, her father was a conservative businessman. Her mother was a sort of typical, you know, fairly conservative, mainline denomination, Methodist. And back then, as you know, the mainline denominations were generally more conservative. They're not, you know, liberal like they are now.
Yeah.
But the key break point, Jerry, was when they brought to Park Ridge United Methodist Church a new youth minister, and the guy's name was Don Jones, and he became really Hillary's first mentor. He was a religious left social justice Christian, and he really worried the older folks in the congregation who thought he was a socialist. It probably was. Some of them called him a communist. I don't think he was a communist, but he was definitely to the left. And they, you know, they immediately had their fears confirmed when, for one of the first major field trips, he took the Park Ridge Methodist kiddies to Chicago to meet Saul Alinsky. And, you know, there was kind of a curious choice for a mission trip. Here's somebody who was an agnostic, if not atheist, Jew. But, you know, he had the right view of the world, right? You know, redistribute the wealth from the haves to the have-nots, as he put it.
Dedicate your books to Lucifer, you know,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah, that's right.
Take on Frank Nitti as your mentor, Saul Alinsky.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes, start your book, your magnum opus, Rules for Radicals, with an introductory acknowledgement that Alinsky wrote himself to Lucifer. And so that was but again, to the religious left and some of these social justice left people, it really doesn't matter if the person's a Christian as long as he's got the right ideas. Right, and the right ideas here called for, a socialist, communist, collectivist, redistributionist state. And so, you know, as far as Don Jones believed, Alinsky was doing the Lord's work there, whether he knew it or not. And so that was step number one. And then Hillary's father did what probably thousands of parents listening to us right now, Jerry, have done, which is took his life savings and his wonderful little daughter and sent her off to a secular college in the Northeast where they, you know, gave her a good liberal brainwashing. She went off to Wellesley. And so it was at Wellesley where she further went left, which of course she would. Her dad paid for it. I guess he didn't realize what he was paying for. And there she did for her senior thesis. She did a study on the tactics and strategies of Saul Alinsky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she came closer in touch with Alinsky at that point. But so it was all of that latter 1960s stuff from about 1965 to about 1968, 1970, when she began her permanent shift to the left.
You know, this is really fascinating, and you wrote a book about this that's not even in print, to my knowledge, called God and Hillary Clinton. Tell us the background of that book.
I hope it's still in print.
Oh, good. Oh, well, good. I mean,
I haven't checked lately. But,
yeah, I remember at one point you had joked maybe, you know, on one of these radio segments we've done through the years that, you know, unfortunately they had to, you know, get rid of some of those books because Obama became the nominee, not Hillary.
Well, we joked, the publisher and I, that, first of all, it sold very few copies, even though it was HarperCollins. And we said it was stuck between conservatives who didn't believe she believed in God and liberals who didn't care that she believed in God. And I got to tell you, Jerry, one of my young son, who's about 9 years old, was flipping around our bookshelves a couple weeks ago, and he saw a book that said God and Hillary Clinton. He said, God and Hillary Clinton? Who in the world wrote that? And my daughter said, John, that's Daddy who wrote that book. So,
but what was implied in that, the idea that God and Hillary Clinton have nothing to do with each other? Is that the idea?
Well, that's right.
From a child's perspective?
One of the reasons that I wrote the book, it came after my books, God and Ronald Reagan and God and George W. Bush, and the publishers said, we'd like you to do more of these God and books.
Right? Yeah.
I don't want to just write God and books, but they even suggested another person that I wasn't interested in writing it on. And I said, but I would like to do one on a religious left liberal, because at that point in time, like 2004, you asked anybody in politics about religious people, and they assumed that they're all quote-unquote fundamentalists, right? The secular media has this narrow caricature. I wanted people in the secular media to rediscover the religious left, to know that there are people out there like Hillary Clinton who think that by supporting abortion, they're doing the work of Jesus.
Okay, how does that work? I mean, take the example of abortion specifically. I mean, for me, from a Christian perspective, I have been strongly pro-life ever since I heard a Catholic priest, Father John Powell, who used to teach at Loyola in Chicago. I heard him give a lecture one time in a church in Chicago in 1980, and I became instantly 100% pro-life, and I've never gone back, and I, you know, because it's the taking of a human life. How does she justify abortion from a supposedly Christian perspective?
Yeah, it's been hard for me to pinpoint exactly where it happened. I interviewed a guy named William Harrison who was Hillary's personal OBGYN in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And if that name is familiar to you and your listeners, and it probably is on this show, Jerry, he happened to be the single largest abortion provider in the entire state of Arkansas. Harrison did about 70,000 abortions. Ooh. And I tracked him down, and I was surprised. I got a hold of him, but I emailed with him, I talked to him, and among the things that I asked him, I said, you know, how do you square up Hillary describing herself as a devoted, old-fashioned, traditional Methodist and being so on fire for abortion? And he said, well, I'm offended by your question. He said, I'm a Methodist, and I support abortion. He said, our Methodist church is very pro-choice. That's how he put it. And, you know, that was a further awakening for me. If you go to the website of the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, right? The Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, you'll see about 30 different denominations there that are members. The Episcopal Church is one of them.
Yes.
I believe Presbyterian Church USA,
yes,
is one of them. The United Church of Christ, Barack Obama's denomination, yes, or one-time denomination. I don't know that he has a denomination right now. And the United Methodist Church was a member also until April. This last April, just, yeah, a few months ago, they finally withdrew from the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. And what was a very, very narrow General Assembly vote, but at least they withdrew. And no one has asked Hillary about this, by the way, her response to that. But Hillary would say for a long time, she'd kind of glow, I am so comfortable in this church. And one of the reasons why was that the Methodist Church was very liberal and when it came to abortion.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm with you. I don't know if I've ever told you this about myself, but even in my college days when I was agnostic, if not atheist, I was always pro-life, because I just thought, it just struck me as if you engage in sexual activity that leads to the creation of an unborn child, and I was a biology major, I knew what was there was a life. I just thought, it just seems unfair to me that you would abort the child. That just didn't seem right. I don't understand why liberals who always talk about fairness don't get this. Mm. But Hillary, somewhere along the line, she went full bore. Roe v. Wade, 1973, I don't know what, but somewhere in the 1970s, she just became an intense pro-choice advocate, and that has only increased to where now I describe her as a flat-out abortion fanatic. Mm. I mean, you just can't get worse on the abortion issue than Hillary Clinton. When Planned Parenthood says that you know, she is really their best friend, and she tells them, "I have your back."
Yeah,
I mean, she means it. But Planned Parenthood gave her their Margaret Sanger Award in 2009.
You know, I remember when Bill Clinton was in office many, many times. You know, both as governor in Arkansas, but then also as president. And there was a joke that would circulate around that time, and that is, what would Bill Clinton do every time an abortion bill would come on his desk? And the joke was, or the answer was, he'd pay it. There is a sense in which, you know, abortion as an issue is partly, you know, in a sense, it's to cover up something else.
Yeah. Well, that could be. And I could tell you this. This is another thing that I researched in the book, God and Hillary Clinton, is that Bill was conflicted on the abortion issue. He saw it as truly the taking of a life. And Bill has read the Bible, and he was having trouble trying to figure out exactly where he should stand on this position. And I go through this carefully in the book. It's very troubling. I think I wrote an article on it, which you can find online, maybe even for the National Catholic Register, I think I might have written it for, in the last few years. But he went to his minister at a very popular Baptist church in Little Rock, and I want to say the guy's name was Vaught, V-A-U-G-H-T. And this is kind of sad. Clinton said, "I'm struggling with this issue. Can you give me some guidance on it?" And Vaught was one of those kind of early evangelicals, late 70s, early 80s, who hadn't really thought through the issue yet. And he admitted that he hadn't. And he went to the scriptures, and he studied them in Greek and did some personal translation. And he came to the conclusion that life is life when you breathe air or breathe life into it, and thus the baby really isn't a baby until it comes out of the womb and breathes air. That's what he came up with. And he told that to Bill Clinton, and that was really that was very key in Bill moving toward the pro-choice position where his wife already was.
You know,
so
it's
Bill Clinton could have got some better guidance back then. Who knows how different everything might have been?
That's a good point. I can't help but think of the Simon and Garfunkel line, you know, a man, he hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. And I would also say, as far as the Greek is concerned, the Greek New Testament, it says in Luke chapter 1, when John the Baptist is in utero in the womb of Elizabeth, his mother, and Mary, the mother of Jesus, now is pregnant with Jesus inside her, and it says that the baby leapt for joy, the baby inside of Elizabeth.
John the Baptist.
Yeah, exactly. And the Greek word there is brephos, B-R-E-P-H-O-S, if you transliterate those letters or whatever. And it means baby, and they use the same word for a baby that's born versus a baby that's unborn. And, you know,
right.
You've written books about Ronald Reagan. It's interesting that he, as a political figure, moved from where he had signed one of the most liberal pro-abortion bills in the country, in the history of the country, in California when he was governor, but later became pro-life. And when he was asked about it in the first major debate, or the only debate with Carter, he said, you know, first of all, I happen to notice that everybody who's pro-choice has already been born. And he devastated the pro-choice position, I think, in that one question or one observation.
Yeah, he did. I've spent a lot of time in this one as well. It was called the Therapeutic Abortion Act, right? They love these names. in the state of California. It was 1970. And Reagan admitted that he hadn't really thought much about this because, I mean, it was pre-Roe versus Wade. So people weren't getting, you know, 1.5 million abortions a year. It was very rare in those days. And I know this very well, Jerry, because Bill Clark, I'm Clark's biographer. He died in 2013. And Clark was not only Reagan's number one foreign policy advisor in the 1980s, he was Governor Reagan's chief of staff.
Wow.
And so when this issue came up, Clark literally loaded up Reagan with basically Catholic stuff, because Clark was went to a novitiate. Clark almost became a priest. He was giving him a lot of Catholic theology on this issue, Thomas Aquinas, everything.
In favor of pro-life.
Yeah, favor of pro-life. Reagan took it all home over the weekend, read all of it. It reinforced the pro-life inclinations that he already had. So he was pro-life, but what happened was he signed that bill thinking that his signature and what he was doing was mitigating a bill that would have otherwise have been worse. So he was trying to actually improve it. What he didn't realize and what Clark didn't realize was there was a mental health provision in the bill that was large enough to drive a truck through.
Yeah.
They didn't understand. Reagan said and Clark both said they had no idea how doctors and patients alike would abuse that provision to basically justify any abortion.
So
really, if you want to look at this in a kind of providential sense, the bill was probably going to be passed anyway. But Reagan really learned from this. And he said that was his greatest regret, pre-presidential. And one of the reasons why Reagan was such a solidly pro-life president is that he wanted to vow that nothing like that would ever happen to him again on the abortion issue.
Excellent. All right, Paul, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Paul Kanger, visionsandvalues.org, for more information. Appreciate all your great work.
All right. Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.